Hello and welcome to the official Leverage Redemption After Show,
a very distinctive podcast. I'm Felicia Michelle.
I'm Yael Teagle, and today we are talking about the debutante job. You know, I was never a debutante.
I wasn't either. I don't think I'm coordinated enough to do the
Well, luckily, that's not what this episode is about. So let's go into the studio and talk about what actually did happen.
We're back, season two of the official Leverage Redemption After Show, a very distinctive podcast. And we are back bigger and better for you guys.
We went to New Orleans. We went to the set. We got you exclusive behind-the-scenes footage. We got tours of the HQ. We got so much that we had to share with all
of you. So basically, we fangirled out for you and got all the information that you want to know for you guys.
Yeah, because we're fans, so we needed to know what the fans wanted to know. And we made sure we asked. I'm so excited. We have this great stuff to show you all season long. This is season two, episode one, the debutante job. I'm loving this opening.
I mean, hello. We have royalty. We have a full team.
We have a full team. The opening sequence to this episode, seeing our beloved Hardison be essentially, I feel like the... He was like Mission Impossible, James Bond, like super spy.
That man said, what are you doing? Get back in the car.
I love the way that we opened this episode and started off the season with a bang.
It was a big bang.
And then we have our whole team reunited. How did it feel? How did it feel for you? Because you can hear how excited I was.
I mean, obviously, we love to see all the gang there. But for me, this episode really is like a big brother, little sister moment. And that continuation of Brianna just evolving in herself and really coming into her own and wanting to be seen as I'm just Brianna, not like the little sister. Like, I'm not on the same level, but I'm making my own way, you know?
Absolutely. I think that it really solidifies, you know, he was gone last season and she was like, I am a member of this team. This is how I do my things. And it's, you know, them butting heads makes sense, right?
Well, I think it's a little different because it's like you have someone, and this could be anybody, right? This could be any situation where it's like someone's coming in doing the same job, like whoever, like your predecessor was coming in and like, oh, I don't know. I would have done it like this. I would have done it like that. It's annoying because I've been here, Browns. I've been here. I've been putting the work in. Like, I've gotten better. Like, I've taken accountability. I've grown. And here you come from London to tell me that, to make me feel like I'm not good enough or that I'm not as good as you are, you know, kind of like, and I don't think he was doing it in a way, Hardison was doing it in a way to put her down, but really like, that's your little sister. So you're like, kind of like, you know, pulling rank.
Yeah. And I think that they handled it in such a beautiful way because Brianna has grown that now she's not uncomfortable telling him, this is how I feel. You need to step back. You are overstepping. I'm part of this team.
Oh, and Elliot was over them. He was over the fighting. He was giving very much like, you know, if you're fortunate enough to have experienced a sibling and the little sibling rivalry and that back and forth, it was really childish. It was super childish, you know?
I mean, they're...
The vibe was...
They're the children of the team, right?
That is true, I guess.
She's the youngest, yeah. But also, like, Hardison has always been kind of the baby of the team, right?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and him being a big brother... You know, I feel like when I get with my big brother, we also fight, even
still
though we're
childish.
Yeah,
same. Very
even though we're
of that.
Very much adults,
at least on paper.
Yeah. Let's talk about the return of Harry. The way we pull him back into this,
oh, Mr. Wilson,
yes, is so wonderful. I love using our team to fix his problem. Be like, we're gonna solve this real quick. We need you. We're just gonna
that was
wrap
a,
this up.
His face. He was like, what are all you guys doing here? Like, what is going on?
But at least he knew not to argue, not to call them out. He knew to keep going with it. He knew it would benefit himself if he kept going.
And honestly, like, how could you have started the season with that? Even though, okay, new characters, right? People love Leverage. People love, you know, season one. But new characters, sometimes people can't, like, okay. But they're like, nah, he needs to come back. Like, you know, even thinking at it when season one ended, I was like, how could... how can you not be on this, a permanent part of this team? Like, how can you not be, like, you fit in so well in a way that challenges people and brings something fresh and different that Brianna doesn't, you know, bring, you know, some, an addition to what she brings, I guess.
Absolutely. I think that his addition to the team was so meaningful last season and really was so important that him leaving, I was like, no, that's not how this works. Everybody joins the team and then you stay, right? Like, look at Hurley. Hurley is part of the team elsewhere and still comes back, right? The team, you don't get to play once. I bet, not to get ahead of ourselves and get into predictions, but oh. I bet Fake Nate returns. That is a bet that I'm willing to make.
You think Fake Nate is going to, okay.
I don't know if he's returning this season, but he is returning.
Fake Nate.
Fake Nate. That look, guy. You don't join the team for one con and never come back. That doesn't happen.
That is true. But what I love is that, like, Sophie has this affection towards him that's, like, grown even more. Like, I don't know. Were you getting, like, romantic kind of vibes? Were you getting, like, flirty? And
how
I don't know if it's because, I don't know if it's because Gina Bellman is just such a freaking knockout that you're just, like, yeah, she's seducing anybody she talks to. She has that really sultry voice, you know? And she, when she says, you know, our Mr. Wilson, or she, like, says he belongs to us, you know, like that mm-hmm. closeness that is developing there, like that fondness that she has for him.
I can see where you're coming from, but I disagree. And I think that their relationship is not romantic
at this point.
And I'm not ready for
at this point
to be.
I'm selling tickets to the ship. If anybody wants to come along, let me know. I'm selling tickets to the ship. Yeah.
Well, so far in this episode, what we saw was that she's in charge and she's struggling internally with what that means, right? She's trying to figure out, as he points out, we were part-time in charge and now you're full-time responsible. And she's trying to find that balance.
And the comparison, again, I guess now you're looking, Hardison and Brianna are comparing, or she's comparing herself to Hardison and Sophie's comparing herself to, you know, to Nate. Like, you're comparing yourself in ways that you can't do that. I think, like, the best lesson of this even was too, even with the young debutante, is like, you can't compare your journey and where you're supposed to do to someone else's journey and what they do. And, you know, she brought Mr. Wilson in to get that perspective, because one thing that Harry Wilson does is he does provide really interesting perspective. He throws a monkey wrench in, you know, like he's a really smart guy. So he just comes in different type of ideas. And I think she needed him to come for that security, to know that he wouldn't just tell her what she wanted to hear, that he would have insight that's different, because he never was under, only leadership that was he was ever under was hers. Mm-hmm. Like, he never was on the old team. He doesn't know what it was like back before, you know, where Elliot and Parker know and Hardison know, and they can call her out on different things or compare the two different leadership styles. But
it's so interesting, because last season, even though she was kind of running things part-time, you know, trying to figure out what she wanted to do with her life, this season she is fully in charge. But does that mean that Parker was more in charge last season? Because I know that in the years in between, Parker was running the team. So do we feel like we're going to end up having to deal with Parker kind of, I mean, she's let go of control, has no problem with that.
None at all.
Yeah.
Letting go is not a Parker's problem. Letting go is not one of her issues, I don't think.
No. She letting go and jumping off a building, she's into it. I want to talk about our debutante, because we did have this case with Petra Valkov and Bradley Simkov. What did you think about this story?
I thought it was really interesting, because it was essentially just a story that anyone can kind of connect with. You're a teenager and your parent wants you to do something you don't want them to do.
Absolutely.
It just so happens that they are, like, in charge of, you know, royalty. Like, that's all.
Yeah, I think that it's a really, like you're saying, it's a really relatable story about, you know, your parents have expectations for you and they're pushing you towards it. And some people it's, you know, this, some people it's school, some people it's different things. I have a friend who is a doctor because her parents made her become one. I think,
Lord,
I know, but I think that this was so interesting, because we also introduce Todd with an H, who was the majoring in ceramic arts and a drummer in a ska band who's in love with our debutante.
Okay. So I don't know. I was watching this and I was like, the real ones will know about Ska. The real ones will know. The real ones will know. And even Brown was like, Ska? Like, the real ones will know. I was like, that was in there for somebody. And I was like, I was one of those somebodies.
I really love this hidden love story and the fact that we also had another hidden love story. We got some history from Sophie and Ralphie Roy. This was such a beautiful history that we learned about
it
her.
It was hilarious. She was like, oh, I really didn't want to have to do this. And I'm like, well, what's going on? She's like, oh, I really didn't want to. Oh, my gosh. She's like, Kiki.
This song is about her.
That, like, it was a whole vinyl. Is that not a whole album, right? It's like, this is, yeah, Kiki on it.
Oh, my goodness. It reminds me of in the old series, there's a painting of her. Like, this woman has lived a life.
And so back to my original point with the, Sophie can seduce. That's what she can do. She can seduce. She can make men forget what their original point is, right? And so why couldn't she, you know, seduce Mr.
Wilson is not ready, and neither is she.
Maybe not yet.
Slow your roll.
Maybe not yet. When y'all see me in the fan predictions, don't say anything.
You're stressing me out.
It's only the first episode. I've already stressed you out.
Yes, only the first episode, and we still have so much more to tell everybody about this episode.
This whole season, actually.
This whole season. We have so much more coming up. Don't go anywhere.
I know there are some amazing moments that happen on set. So if you could talk to me about some amazing moments from season one or season two even.
Season one, there was a really hilarious moment with Christian and I where we had to pull this bag of money out of the water on the Rolling on the River job. You know, we're not in the water. We're near the edge of the water and we're pulling out this stuff. And all of a sudden we look at each other and we say, is this where they said the alligator was? Is this the pond? Is this the same pond that we it's like nighttime, you know, we weren't really sure what was gonna come out attached to the bag, but thank God everything was fine. But yeah, there was that moment. And then there was another moment by the same pond in the Spirit Ruse job where Noah and I got to set, and there were like four levels of people warning us about wildlife. And the first one was, okay, yeah, so we've got some wildlife out here. We just want you to be aware, you know, nothing major. And I'm like, oh, okay. Next person comes up. Yeah, so we just want to be aware. There's wildlife. And I said, what are we talking? Like squirrels, like maybe some, you know, lizards. And they're like, actually, we got a gator. We got a gator lives in this pond. Oh, wow. Okay, like a 2 foot, 3 foot, no big deal. Oh, okay, we have a wrangler. Okay, okay. So the one I have to lay next to on the ground, that's where the next person comes up to me and says, this is our gator wrangler. Don't worry, it's only about 4 to 6 feet long. It kept going. The animal kept getting bigger and bigger. And so finally, the last person comes over. It's about 5 to 6 feet long. Don't worry, it's contained. It's kind of shy. She's actually quite a shy alligator. Oh my gosh. So we're sitting there in the middle of the scene. I'm laying down, whatever, the whole time Noah and I are cracking jokes. So the camera's over my shoulder onto Noah, and behind him about, you know, I don't know, 20, 30 feet back is the edge of the pond. And all of a sudden, you know, we're filming and I know when the end of the scene is. So I'm waiting and waiting. He finishes and I go, gator! And he jumped and looked behind him. And he looked at me like he was going to strangle me. But it was a really, really good moment to mess with somebody. So yeah, we had a little gator fun that day.
Oh, my favorite scene from season one has to probably be the top of our Halloween episode when they dressed us. And I was given free reign of all HQ to do whatever I wanted. And camera said they would follow me and I set it off. That had to be the funnest scene to shoot for sure.
You know, it's difficult for us to choose like favorite moments because our favorite moments, I mean, what the fans see on the screen is the chemistry between us. And our favorite moments often happen like off script, like when little things happen between us as actors. I mean, what about when you were jumping off that container the other day? That was hilarious.
Yeah. We asked the writers, we're like, you know, give us the stuff together. Sure, you have to have guest stars. Sure, you have to have bad people. You have to have the person you're helping. You have to have the victim. You have to have the conflict. But we truly love the stuff that we get to do together.
Because tell them the story, what happened there with that container.
With the container? Oh, yeah. So I'm jumping off a container, and it's like a train container. And I'm climbing all the way up, and I'm jumping off, and my feet are killing me. My knees are about to explode. I've done it 3 times. And she's staring at me as I do it. And on the fourth time, she looks over, and she goes, are you jumping from the top? I'm like, where the hell were you, man? I'm jumping right in front of you. I land right in front of her. And she couldn't see it. She's like, that's quite far. And I was like, oh, who? I know. And I'll stumble off and wobble off because I got no more, you know. Anyway. It's just funny, though. But it's like, you know, she's always in character. She's always in her character. And she didn't notice it because she's playing. And it was actually really kind of a nice moment between us on that part because, you know, she's nervous and a little frightened. And I jumped down and say, I got this, go ahead and go. And I gave her a little wink. And how'd that make you feel?
Oh, I love it. Whenever we have those little moments, you know, we don't look at it in the big picture. We look at it in little kind of micro moments. And when we share little moments like that in the scene, it's like, it's very magical.
And, you know, it was earlier this year. We had filmed a lot of stuff, but the headquarters hadn't been built yet. And so we went through two and a half weeks without being in headquarters. And that's all of us. You know, we were all off doing our own thing. And so the first day we came in to do headquarters, it was a lot of dialogue. It was 3 or 4 pages, and it just flowed, and we were having fun, and it was all, you know, 5 of us in the scene. And it just felt like home. It felt like family again.
Well, certainly one of my favorite moments on screen was getting to play a scene with my daughter, Auden, who was playing my daughter on the show. That was a tremendous moment for both of us to get to sit across the table from each other and in character play.
Well, you remember that thing that you thought that you snuck onto my phone to always track where I am? It works both ways.
Oh, I see.
There were a lot. I had a really good time last year, which is why I signed up to come back down here. It's a great group of people, many of whom I've had the pleasure of working with now for almost 20 years. It's become a bit of a family, and I like working with family.
We got a chance to talk to the writer of The Debutante Job, the one and only Mr. John Rogers, who is a co-creator of Leverage Redemption and, of course, a consulting producer this season. First of all, this is the season premiere of the second season. How does it feel to be back for season 2?
Utterly impossible. I mean, when Dean called me for the first season, I was like, Dean, this isn't going to work. There's no way it's going to happen. And then they made it happen. And so a second season, the fact it was a giant success, was a pleasant surprise for everyone. And not for Dean. He knew.
I knew.
The fans knew. As soon as 7 million people showed up for the trailer, it's like, oh, okay. And so second season, though, look, second season is the hardest on every show. Never mind a reboot. And in particular, we knew we only had Aldis for X amount of episodes. We knew we had him for this. And we wanted to go to England to set up the plot line that we would be executing through the rest of the season. And so there were a lot of building blocks to put into place. And so that was kind of the challenge of this, is we have to get like 3 or 4 things done. So we have to get Harry back in the show, you know, because Noah's back. And so, you know, sometimes you start a show with, oh, I have a high concept. This one was, oh, we have an enormous amount of very specific jobs we have to accomplish to get this done. And then sort of nicely enough, looking at England, it was, you know, post-Brexit, but it was about the fact that it had become kind of an oligarch's paradise. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the writers who actually found the great note that because of centuries-old building code, you can't build up, you have to build down. And so the idea of like, well, what would bring Hardison back? Because Hardison isn't really doing crime stuff anymore, but we heavily implied he's doing human rights things. And so, of course, the human rights story, which one do you want to do? Led us to the journalist story, and that, there you go. That we wound up with a nice plot that we could fit all of our problem solving on top of.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, you really had all these things you have to accomplish in this episode. How did you know that you wanted to start this season? And I guess it seems like we're getting a lot more of Sophie stuff without spoiling too much.
Yeah.
You know, we're reminded of some of her beloved alter egos.
Yeah. The sort of going into this, that was the thing, is we used Harry first season as the framework, but you can't use Harry as the lens again. And it was very much Harry and Brianna first season, the two newcomers. So if we're talking about redemption, you know, Elliot and Christian's been very definite about this. Elliot is never redeemed. He never will be. He is in the eyes of everyone but him, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. But so who can we look at? And Sophie, we did. And, you know, with Gina being now very much the center of the show and really bringing whole new flavors to Sophie now that she gets the chance to play with this character in this stage of her life, you know, the post the first show, you know, it was worth going back and looking at one of my favorite episodes from the original, which was King George's Job. And that hanging Chad we had, that there was one job that she regretted and one person who died of grief because of the situation. And that's why she doesn't do the sweetheart con anymore. And so it's like, well, we want to go to England. We want to do this. Let's start bringing all that back. And let's start talking about her identity crisis, something we looked at in the first show, in a much more mature way. In the first show, she was running from her identity crisis and trying to resolve it. In the second show, she is living with it. She is integrating it. She's no longer saying, I used to be that person, now I'm this person. It's, I've always been this person who's a continuum of people, and I have to make things right. And that also tied very much into the idea of redemption, the idea that we set up in the first season of, you don't just get to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to fix stuff before you can actually feel like you're allowed to forgive yourself.
Speaking of cool stories and the past, we get to meet a rock star who wrote a song about Sophie, a.k.a. Kiki.
Yeah.
Tell me about this.
We wanted to get in through the next door. And it was one of those things where you really are running up against page space. It's like we have only 45 to 50 pages. We need to get down there, but we need to solve this. We're only going to see this guy one other time. Like, oh, what's an interesting way to solve this problem? And I forget who came up with the idea. It's like a dissolute rocker. It's because specifically some rock star was in the article we read about talking about flooding. That's how they discovered his neighbor. It's almost word for word what actually happened, how they discovered the neighbor had built down as his basement flooded. And we said, well, rock star, well, how do we get out of this? And it was just like, you know what? I just think there's an enormous amount of Sophie and culture, where British culture are unaware of. And the knowledge that you can give Gina, I need you to assume an entirely different personality by changing the angle of your clothing and your voice. That's it. And that's one of the great things about having Gina Bellman. She's an insanely gifted comedic actor. So something other actors couldn't pull off. You're like, I need you to go in there and be such a giant presence as a late 70s, early 80s muse that you completely buy this plot twist. She's like, yeah, right. And she pulls it off.
She totally does. Yeah. I absolutely love that. I love the way that we incorporate all the characters into this episode. Let's talk about our very small use of Aldous, because we don't have Hardison too much.
No, we don't. I mean, look, he's a giant DC movie star now. I mean, he's just huge. I actually went to breakfast with him a little while ago, and he's gotten used to it. It's uncomfortable the degree to which people are staring at him in restaurants now. It's like yes, I'm the ugly old guy who's friends with him. Yeah, and so we thought like if I was writing the Aldous show, what would it look like? And we just wanted to give you sort of a cool Batman entrance, like,
yes,
in this whole alternate universe. And it's in the script. It's like, this is his Batman entrance, just because I knew I couldn't be on the set. And I wanted to tell Dean, this is how we're going to shoot this. And so we just wanted to radiate, like, he's just cooler and scarier than he used to be. And then when he comes back, he's the little brother again. And he drives Elliot crazy again, you know, and he will, you know, he cede to Sophie on the emotional issues again. But this is the idea, is like, he has created his own separate network specifically designed around human rights, etc., and then kind of dips back into crime world for the harder stuff. And that was the idea. It's like, Aldous Hodge is a movie star. Let's give him a movie star entrance, is basically what it boiled down to.
It's perfect. It was so perfect. You know, you and I were talking earlier. This is your baby. This was your baby. And now you have given it over to Kate. You co-wrote this episode with her. Tell me about, relinquishing control. As someone who can't do that, I don't understand.
You know, it's really interesting, because we actually ended the show the way I wanted to end the show, which never happens. We ended the show the way I thought we should end the show while we were shooting the pilot. When I have told you this, right? I turned to Dean the night we were shooting the last shot of the pilot and went, I know how the show ends. And we got there. And so, unlike a lot of creators who had unresolved issues about never getting there, we didn't stay too long. We got exactly where I wanted to go. And so I had closure. And anyone on the show will tell you, when they were like, we're going to do a reboot, I was the one who had to be talked into it.
You're breaking my heart.
No, not in a bad way. But like, my kid had gone off to college.
Sure.
Like, I didn't need the kid to live at the house anymore. Like, I wanted him to go get, or her to go get married and, you know, do the things they do. And I, not that I hated leverage, but it's like, look, we did it.
Right.
Like, I don't even know if we could do it again. Like, that was a miracle. Good shows aren't made, they escape, you know, the system. And it was very much, you know, Dean and Chris, and then Alice and Beth called, and Christian called, like, ah, okay, and came back to help. But it's always been, look, and I think this comes with maturity. That was my show. I am in a different place in my life now. I am not necessarily as hip as I used to be, and I was never that hip. I have a different writing voice. I have different priorities. I'm not going to be able to make the best version of leverage anymore. You know, there's a different sensibility. The younger writers grew up. I mean, I wrote the Brianna speech in first season, which is like, this is the worst world you know is the only world I've known. That was my speech, because it was me trying to say, like, this is why I'm not doing this anymore, because these writers who've grown up in this world, they're the ones who should be telling these stories. And I'm glad to help. I'm glad. And I do get sucked in because there's certain tricks that you have to know. I'm glad to be the old uncle they call when they need a weird heist or they need to fix Act 3. But yeah, I mean, everyone's kind of going, what's it like to give up control? I'm like, it's in super good hands. I mean, I was the one who advocated for Kate Rourke. I'd worked with her on Librarians and worked around with a bunch of other stuff. You know, it's Dean's there. Chris and I helped write a couple episodes first season. I was around first season. I think it's a flaw in Hollywood that you, one of my favorite quotes in the world is, it's a tribute to a lot of people, but it's just actually an old quote. It's the cemeteries are full of irreplaceable men. Mm. And it's like, nobody's irreplaceable, you know? And it was always my goal. On every show, people have different goals. And some people, like, I want the show to be the manifestation of my vision. And every writer that I've worked with will tell you, I run a show like a jazz band. Like, you're here because you play an instrument I can't play. And nothing makes me happier than when I get a script and I turn the last page and go, I couldn't have written that. And so it was very natural to go, I just want to see a show that surprises me. I want to see the Leverage Redemption I couldn't have made, both creatively as a creator, but also as a fan. Because there's stuff now I get to see that surprises me, because I'm not in all the cuts anymore. Mm-hmm. And there's episodes and moments where I'm like, I get to be a fan again of these characters I helped create. Or, you know, and though I'm not there every day, Chris and I created Harry and Brianna, you know, interpretations I never expected. That's fantastic. I think clinging too tightly to it would just make the show kind of not as good and make me not as happy.
I want to talk again about this character of Kiki and the song.
Yeah.
Because we don't hear the song.
No, you can't ever hear the song.
We don't know the song.
No.
Is there a song in your head?
Yeah, it's kind of that Clapton-y power ballad that's quite famous. Like Elliot, I don't remember if we got the line of the episode, but he's like, he learned to play guitar by learning to play that song. Yeah. So it's a famous, like, big British Eric Clapton style power ballad about this girl, and infamously it's the girl that, like, broke his heart but inspired him for like two albums.
Amazing. Well, thank you for chatting with us, as always.
No,
thank
my
you
pleasure.
For such a brilliant show, and thank you for a perfect season premiere.
Look, you have those actors, you have these fans. I can't imagine. I'm just really happy people are happy it's back, and I'm really happy we can give you a show that you love. So I don't know if it's a perfect season premiere, but I hope it gives everybody what they're looking for, which is more leverage and hopefully more leverage for many years to come.
Now here's more with Aldis and Elise about the debutante job.
I am sitting down with Aldis Hodge and Elise Shannon, and we are talking about Leverage Redemption season 2. Hello, everybody.
Hey.
What's happening? Yo, how you doing?
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited to be chatting with both of you. I want to know, we start the season off and we get to see this relationship, this friendship, this sibling rivalry ship really blossoming. My first question is about the handshake that we see in the debutante job where you make a snail. I'd like to understand what is happening here.
I think Elise came up with that because we were talking about what kind of shake, they would have something. I mean, you know, they family, so they got something going on. I even got a shake with my real little sister, Brianna. So, like, I mean, you know, we were trying to figure it out, and Elise came with that. It was like, yo, this is funny as hell. Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the boredom of public school kicked in, because that's actually something me and my brother used to do, just figure out ways you could, like, subvert a handshake and make it something that the other person doesn't expect and kind of like make their hand into something. There's like jellyfishes, there's snails. So we just stuck with that one because I thought it was cute.
Snail.
Snail.
I love that last season, the story between these two was that, you know, Brianna's trying to figure out her place in the group. And now it feels like we've got them both there and both competing for love, for attention, for being the best hacker. Talk to me about this friendship, this relationship.
I mean, for me, I think it's like what they wanted to play on was the nature of a little bit of sibling rivalry, but I don't think they really compete in this space. I think for Hardison, it's more protection. You know, this is, you know, big bro, little sis. I don't know if you're ready for the world. And let me hover over like an overstanding parent, an annoying parent. Go leave me alone. Let me go off to college and chill. But you want to come to college with me. You know what I mean? Like, I think that he is too afraid for her in order to trust her. But then she proves herself and he can't deny that. You know, he's got to step back and be like, oh, OK, you know what I'm saying? Little Patty Wine, I taught you well. He's going to always take the credit, by the way, you know.
Yeah, and I think, like, just like a lot of young people who are interested in fields that, like, their parents are interested in or that other siblings are interested in, you have to toe this balance between, like, I know that the best mentor for me is somebody that's already in my network. And sometimes that's, like, hard for somebody who's still developing a sense of identity and wants to separate themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, if Denzel's your daddy, like, you know, why would you take acting lessons really anywhere else? But it's still this, like, this balance between wanting to be unique, but understanding that you also have the privilege of having your mentor in your network. And I think Brianna and Hardison share that.
Hey, Elise, real quick, who's parking in your room?
Okay, so funny story about this sign.
I'm just confused.
I found the one free parking spot in New Orleans where I didn't have to pay.
Stole it, is what you're saying. I'm making that to the public.
And they made this sign and put it next to my car. And so I took it, and now the spot is still free. So
not only theft, vandalism, public property. You got people parking in a spot they're not supposed to be parking in.
I'm pretty sure this is actually like a federal crime. So, yeah, please do not tell.
You put that on. They're recording this. You put that all out, all your business. You don't make a good criminal. Have you learned nothing from the show?
I'm just joking. This is a prop. It was made in our prop house.
Not joking. It's official. Look, I could tell
by our art department.
And look at how. Yeah. No, you stole it. You stole it.
Next question.
You took your job literally. You started living your life.
I absolutely love that Elise has been inspired. What Parker taught Brianna to do crime.
Crime is fun.
So in the debutante job, our first episode of the season, we get to see your characters do a con together and be characters together. This moment for me was very exciting. Tell me how it was for you, Elise.
It's also exciting for us because, as you know, Addis is a busy, busy man, and we hardly get to do episodes together. So all that excitement is so real. And, you know, the little sibling rivalry is also real. That's definitely a factor in how Addis and I get back together and cut it up. And, you know, it's a way we express our brother and sisterly love. But yeah, it's just exciting. And it's exciting to have like a little bit of matching costume, something that really solidifies kind of why I'm here in the first place. And just the identity of my character starts to fill in those episodes. And that's really great. And it's also just excellent to have Aldis's chemistry on set because he really just takes it up 4 or 5 notches, and it's a special day, special episode when he's on set for real.
I paid you to say way more than that.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I failed.
You know, you ain't telling about the orphans I saved from the burning building. I had paid you for that too.
And you fed them, and
I fed them.
They all live in your house. And
nah, it's cool. It's cool. You know what? Just cash at me back. It's cool. Just
I'm sorry.
Give me my money because you did half. No, thank you very much. That first of all, that was really lovely. Thank you. I appreciate that, Elise.
Aldis, I got to ask about, I guess, the big opening of Debutante Job, the big reveal. In the script, it says the Batman moment. Tell me about this moment in that episode.
And that was pretty dope because I remember Dean telling me about it. And I, like I said, I just watched it. It came out a lot cooler than I thought. You know, sometimes when you're trying to be too cool, too smooth, you just look silly, you know. But you had your boy out here looking kind of crispy. I thought it was a really cool introduction back, you know, for Hardison, and probably the coolest he's had since the pilot. And when they wrote it and they told me about everything going down with how he uses the technology, obviously, you know, how he uses technology is cool every time. But with this one, with the car and all that kind of stuff, I was like, let's see how this plays out. They did your boy right. It was nice. It was hot as hell. Granted, I'm standing in New Orleans in the middle of 100 degree heat in a trench coat with a scarf, I believe. I'm all black on top of black. So your boy draws the heat. We suffered for that whole scene. Just to let the audience know, it ain't come easy. Your boy was dripping buckets. But, you know, it's the price of art, I suppose.
And now we get to talk about episode one with writer Kate Rourke.
You co-wrote the season premiere, The Debutante Job, with John Rogers. Tell me what that was like. What was it like writing with John?
Well, I've known John for many years now, and writing with John is super fun because, first of all, John knows these characters like the back of his hand. He knows how each single one of them speaks. He knows how they would react to a situation. So he comes in and you say, well, this is sort of the scene that we were thinking about. And he's like, oh yeah, I got it. Don't worry. And then an hour later, you have the scene in your hands. But it's also fun because we approach this story, from the perspective of two very different perspectives. He's the heist guy. I'm the debutante ball person. So we sort of mashed them together and made this episode. But the starting point of the episode was the Jamal Khashoggi situation, where there was a journalist who was taken, essentially, and we, as our leverage team, have to come and get him back.
Yeah, and this episode was directed by Dean. Did you know that going in? Did you have to think about that when you started writing? Like, Dean's going to direct this. What do I do?
Well, no, I mean, first of all, Dean also knows this show like the back of his hand. So you want him directing this evening premiere. You want him setting the tone. And this episode was right up his alley because it's emotional and it's fun. And it also is, it's got some great, great character moments for our characters, for Sophie, for Elise, Brianna, and Hardison especially. It's just a lot of fun, this episode. And Dean is the king of fun.
I feel like Dean and Roger are both kings of fun.
Yes.
do you ever struggle when you're like, guys, we gotta focus?
Yes, it has to be emotional and serious. Come on.
Exactly. That's what the show is. It's emotional and serious.
Yes. Super serious.
Yeah. I would say the
subject matter that we deal with is very serious. So if it didn't have a slightly lighter touch to it, if it wasn't our guys making cracking jokes with each other and finding themselves in slightly ridiculous situations, then it almost would be too difficult to stomach because the things that are happening to our victims are real and horrible. So it's the balance that you have to strike.
Yeah, this show really does work very hard to balance really serious issues. I mean, last season we had human trafficking and we balanced it with Hurley's like taco addiction. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of stuff this show does.
That is exactly correct. That is, you have to, you got to take a little with the other one. So yes.
There is still so much more cool stuff. Don't go anywhere. You're gonna love this.
All right. So this is a fan question. We have some fan questions for you. They want to know, do you have a favorite scene from season one, or maybe even a favorite episode from season one?
Favorite scene is actually in the pilot. Dean Devlin is smart when it comes to this. The very first scene up was with all of us and Harry, and Noah was there, and it was his first, you know, but Aldous was there, Beth was there, Gina was there, I was there, and Harry was there. And it was not the first scene. It was in the middle and all this other kind of stuff. But he was very smart because we hadn't been together in a long time. We really didn't need that much prep because we all love each other. But we went through about 30 minutes, and all of a sudden it was back on track. And I just remember, I'm home. I'm with my family. I'm loving this more than life.
Aww.
And it was my favorite scene, and it was the very first scene we shot. Because Dean didn't want to go shoot something with me and you or Parker and Hardison and then have us all come together. He brought us all together right off the bat and threw us into the fire, and we just rose like phoenixes.
I have a line this season where I say, oh, Elliot is a closet romantic. I think he is a closet romantic.
I know some people that would beg to differ.
I always enjoy the episodes where we play with the structure a little bit, and I've always loved the ones that are a little bit outside of the box. So I'm going to go with, I love the episode, that your big episode with Lamar that Beth directed, because it's so sort of, it's poignant, but it's also incredibly hopeful, and there's a lot of like emotion between the characters. But I always like the episodes where we play with time, so I'm going to go with The Jackal. I know that was a big episode for me, but I really loved doing the 70s look. I loved working with the guest stars in that. We had met so many great guest stars last year. But I just the hair. I'm a girl's girl. I like the hair, the makeup, the costumes. And we had a lot of fun with, you know, playing the 70s. And obviously in original Leverage, we did a couple of episodes where we went like into different time periods. Yeah. And I hope we get to do that again.
Yeah.
Are the vibes kind of different from going into season one of the show and now going into season two?
No.
The thing is, it never feels different.
Yeah.
Like, even when we were off the air for so many years, we got together and it just felt like seamless.
Yeah. Even when we didn't know we were getting picked up, she had come into Los Angeles. Aldous happened to be there. I was actually back. And we got everybody together and went and had dinner. And it was like, I think we actually did a video of the...
Yeah.
I mean, it just felt like old friends, man. We've always felt like a family. We've never felt like, you know, cast members. So it's just like, you know, so you haven't seen your mom or your aunt or whatever in a while, and that's kind of how we are when you get back.
I mean, we'll always be close. I think especially now, we already had that, but then coming and doing this again, you know, when we first started doing Leverage back in the day, you know, Beth had a young child. Got pregnant, I had a baby, you know, my daughter's on set, she's almost a teenager. We've been through so many life things together, we've lost parents, we've gone through real life together. And then you can't underestimate, look, there are people putting their lives in danger and in their workplace, but we spent incredibly long hours together, you know, month after month after month, separated from family, separated from friends. So
For years,
so the bond that we share is incredibly profound.
And we could have gone home, you know, we could have gone home and just and then showed up to work the next day because they're all still going to be there, but we didn't. We'd work anywhere from 12 to 14 hour days, and then we'd all go have dinner that same night to get back up at 6 a.m. and work all over again. And it's, like I said, it's just very rare for a cast to be that close.
All right, Christian, this question is from a fan, and I'm going to say it verbatim. Is there a chance that Elliot and Rhea get back together? Because he deserves it, damn it.
I don't think we're going to see. I think that breakup was serious. You know, John Rogers used to say this all the time because everybody's like, well, you know, Sophie's with Nate and Parker's got Hardison. And what about Elliot? Poor Elliot. He's the fifth wheel and he's all like that. And people used to ask that all the time when I was doing interviews with John. And John Rogers goes, don't you worry about Chris. He goes, don't worry about Elliot. His weekends are full. Elliot keeps a very private life when it comes to stuff like that. He also can't be vulnerable. And last year they kind of explored that, and I was actually vulnerable in front of them. I don't think Elliot liked it. I don't know, Christian didn't like it. You know what I mean? I know Christian likes to play it close to the chest. She was fantastic, by the way. We had so much fun. But if something like that happens and there's a breakup like that, especially with two characters of that caliber, and then we go, oh, you know what? No, they're back together. Then I don't think the public starts trusting us. They don't trust us. And right now they actually trust us. And so when we stick with something and we make something concrete, we stay with it because we want to be true to the fans.
That's a good point. I've never really thought of that before, but you're right. You know, we don't jump and bounce around. Like, we're very, like, committed to the kind of emotional choices we make in the characters. And, yeah, I think that's quite special. It's quite unique, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is.
All right, one last question, and I have to ask this. Christian, what did you say to Gina for her to do it to your eye?
Why? Is there something wrong with my eye? Well, I thought it was itching a little bit. Where's it at? Right here? Not so much here. Right there.
I don't have an answer. What did you do? What did you do? Go on, confess.
Did I
actually walk into my trailer and wake me up from a nap today.
That's exactly what it was.
That's what it was.
Yeah, I said.
I was trying to have a nap in my trailer. Suddenly, there's a knock on my door. He walks in. He says, hey, listen, I was thinking, should we do our EPK together? And I was like, seriously?
Literally, the lights were off, the candle was lit. What were you wearing? It's like some sort of onesie. Yeah.
Thank you so much for watching the show. We love you guys, and thanks for having us today.
Just like our crew, the fans of Love and Redemption are so talented, so check out some of the fan art that we received this season.
The official Love and Redemption After Show is part of the Electric Surge Network on Electric Now. We recommend checking out some of our other original content, like Inglourious Trexperts, and even more official aftershows for Electric Entertainment properties.
Well, thanks so much for watching, but we know that you want even more.
That's right. Not only are we coming out every week after new episodes, but you will be able to find some amazing specials on the Electric Now app.
And if that's not enough for you, you can head over to social media and follow us at After Leverage.
Until next time.
I'm Felicia Michelle.
I'm Yael Teagle.
And this has been
a very distinctive podcast.